We have Mr. Marty Shore on the phone today talking about the book, Ford Total Performance. This is a real chronology of Ford racing from, I think it goes from like 64 to 70, 71,
70s,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's really the heydays.
Very
of
impressive.
Ford. And Marty put a lot of work into this book, and he'll be calling us at the quarter hour and talk all about it.
Marty Shore here.
Hey, Marty. How are you? Welcome to Motormouth Radio.
Hey, it's great talking to you guys.
It's always a pleasure.
It's been
speaking.
A while.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure speaking with you as well. How have you been?
Are you on the air now?
We are on the air. Yes.
We are live. And Marty, we have to introduce you to our new third co-host, Joe D, who's in the studio with us, of course.
Hi, Marty.
To share with this interview.
Great. You guys well?
Pleasure to meet you.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
We're doing very well, keeping the show rolling and doing our best.
Are you keeping the snow moving or what?
We're in the mid-50s today. I'm going to be doing my oil change finally.
Yeah. We pretty much skated through this winter. A couple of rough spots, but I'm feeling that we did pretty well this winter.
Considering up against what we've had the last couple of years, this was pretty
That's
much
great.
A free yeah. pass there, yeah.
So, you know, either you're not talking loud enough or there's some interference, but
It's probably our programming.
You just got to get that pizza out of your mouth.
Right. Oh, you want to start me on pizza again? Oh, we went on a pizza rant.
Who's got pizza? Wait.
I've made the disclaimer on our other show that I now stand by the fact that Queens has better pizza than Brooklyn.
And I beg to differ. I don't know.
But now I got a backup.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not even going to bring in the Bronx because that would be alien. But
right.
Yeah, there's too much water between us. Guys.
That's for sure. So how was it putting this book together, Marty? How was it, Ford Total Performance?
Yeah.
It was an incredible labor of love.
I mean, sure.
It took me probably, over a year.
I'm surprised it was only that long.
Well, wow. It took over a year, but... before I did the book, I had proposed it as another title earlier, so I had gathered a lot of stuff together. But the problem with doing this book was every time I thought I had all the information on something, I would meet somebody who totally destroyed my story gave me new information.
Oh, my God!
Wow. This book is very comprehensive. I mean, if anybody's interested in Ford history from the mid-60s through the early 70s, especially where racing is concerned, and street performance, this book, I'm going to call it the Bible. I'm just going to go out and say it.
Well, thanks. It could have been another 50 pages, because what happened was when I turned the manuscript and art in, I had to end up cutting so much out. Wow. And so many pictures out that we probably could have made another 50 pages in the book, but that couldn't happen at the time, and so it was really painful to take it out. But we managed to keep the good stuff in, and there's still enough, or not enough, but there's a lot of guys who are still left who are veterans of Ford Racing and Ford Motor Company that the story just doesn't die. You know, there's a lot of information, and a lot of it, strangely, has never been published before.
Wow.
So, you know, it was a great job, and there's a lot of great Superstock and FX racers who are still around, and can't say how much longer they will be, but, you know, they're getting on in age just like I am. But it was great meeting some of these guys and talking to them after, you know, 30, 40 years.
You know, Marty, if I can give a quick overview, and I made kind of page-by-page notes on this, but we have everybody in here from a dedication to your grandfather, which I thought was very nice. that was sweet. I mean, we got guys, of course, you got Joe Oldham and Fred Macrot in there. You got Joel Rosen in the book. There's Tasker Ford.
Right.
I mean, we go from everything from hot Mustangs to Lotus Cortinas, Sunbeam Tigers, Torinos, Cosworths, Mavericks, Pintos, back to all sorts of, you know, drag Mustangs and Holman and Moody, also Carcraft Magazine, Cars Magazine. You really covered the gamut, and you must have been having fun in the heyday, because the early pictures of you doing those Ford test events, yeah, you were living the life. Come on.
Well, it was kind of, I didn't realize, to be totally honest with you, I didn't realize all of that until I started working on the book. And I'll tell you why, because I'm no different than anybody else. You get a job to do, you do your job, and you get your paycheck, and life goes on. You don't kind of think that you're part of history, because you never really think that anyone's going to give a damn about a 63 Ford lightweight in 1965.
Right.
So they're certainly not going to care about it in 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was that's all conventional wisdom, but it's not true. And I realized that when I started in this business, I was just a kid. And nowadays, a kid of that same age is a whole different story, because you got kids who are multimillionaires today because of Silicon Valley.
Sure.
And you got young people doing everything. But back in my day, I was one of the youngest guys around doing what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was just happy to be there and doing it. Years later, I realized that, holy crap, you know, I was a kid, and I get this invitation to drive a 427 4.25 Galaxy in the Alps.
Wow.
And I'm saying, I don't have a passport. I've never been further away than Virginia from New York. This is a whole different world. And next thing I know, I'm on a plane and was surrounded by Ford executives and journalists who are all at least 10 years older than I am. And we're heading to Nice, France, and then to Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
And you cannot believe that I was like the proverbial kid in the candy factory.
Marty, I have to say, your dentist must have been happy that you had this job, because he didn't have to use any spreader bars. You had the biggest smile in the world plastered on your face.
And rightly so.
Well, you know, it was really strange, because I went to a place that was like a fantasy land. The only thing us car guys from the Bronx and then, you know, Long Island knew was that Monte Carlo was a place where, you know, that's where the gazillionaires kept their boats.
Right.
And here I am walking down the street in a town that has nothing but wealthy people.
Wow.
And it was amazing, because in addition to driving all these cars in the Alps, I was invited to the palace to meet Grace Kelly and Prince Rainier.
Wow.
And you know, it was just incredible. And I still have my invitation, and we go into the throne room, and there's Princess Grace, and she's more beautiful than I could ever imagine.
Marty, what did you say to her?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Does a kid from the Bronx walk in and go, "Hey, how you doing?
How you doing?"
Well, you know, I don't normally tell people this, but I'll because you're a trusted friend with a trusted audience.
Oh boy!
We all had a receiving line like they have at weddings,
right?
And there's Rainier behind the table, and there's Grace. What I didn't notice at first was that Rainier was standing on a box, because he's shorter than Grace.
I didn't know that.
I love it.
And every time he appeared in public with his wife, he stood on a box.
Oh, wow.
So he's standing there and she's standing there. He doesn't talk to us. He was just smiling and nodding and shaking hands. But Grace did the talking. And I was about number 10 or number 15 online. And it's like a wedding. You say something nice, you shake hands, and you go have a drink. And I noticed, you got to remember, I was a kid, I was from the Bronx, I had an attitude. And I was surrounded by older people.
Oh,
so I'm online, and I notice that Grace is only talking French.
Oh.
And all the journalists were American.
Oui,
oui. And it sort of just pissed me off.
Mm.
And because, I mean, she's from Philadelphia. what the hell is he talking French to a bunch of Americans?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when it's my turn, instead of the usual thing you say to a person, I said, you know, Grace, you got a nice place here. Rainier froze. Grace didn't know what to do. She just looked at me, and I realized I better move on because this could get touchy, you know?
Yes.
I just moved on, and she continued talking French to the other people. The other journalists thought I was a crazy man. They said, what the hell's wrong with you? And I said, how can she talk French? She's from Philadelphia. Mm. We watch her movies. You know, and so I just said it. And, you know, I felt afterwards, good. I felt lousy about it. But the point is.
No, that was great. Are you kidding? Hey, you got a nice joint here. This is great.
Hi, Gracie, you have a lovely home. Yeah. Yes.
As you're looking over your shoulder for the palace guards.
Well, the funny part was that this was January 1963.
Mm-hmm.
Neither Rainier nor Grace were that wealthy.
Oh.
He had a wealthy family that owned the country. But the country wasn't rich.
Mm-hmm.
The country didn't have natural resources.
Right.
All it did was cater to rich people.
Mm.
So they were just comfortably wealthy. The palace was run down.
Oh, wow. Mm.
And the children, we watched them outside in the courtyard playing with their nanny. Trust me, you or I would not let our little tiny infants play in that courtyard. It was broken up cobblestones and bricks. It looked like crap.
Wow.
Now, later on, years later, they became incredibly wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rainier family is, you know, seriously wealthy. But back then, it was just a playground for the rich, and there was only a couple of French hotels in town. Lowy's hadn't built their American hotel yet, and today it's a whole different ballgame.
Wow.
But wow. it was an incredible experience, and driving a 4 and a quarter horsepower Galaxy in the Alps, a car that wouldn't stop and barely stayed on the road, but it was an incredible feeling.
I'm thinking how you would to adjust the carburetor for the thin air.
Mm, yeah. I'm thinking that, you know, after that, after the new persona and the rest of the media crew looking at Marty a different way, that's when he grew the sideburns and said, all right, now I'm going to live up to that persona, guys.
Yes.
The sideburns came later on, but, you know, it proved to be a really great trip because I met Henry Ford and I met Benson Ford and I met one of the four daughters, and, you know, gambled in the casino. I mean, I had never gambled.
Mm,
played cards occasionally with friends.
Did you just say you drove that car up to...
Yeah, that's a big gamble.
That's not a gamble.
Right. A car that wouldn't stop, that you can barely control mountain. Driving it up a mountain. That's a gamble.
Car guys think different than other people. Like, that's what
and
I like.
And we had a night in the casino. And, you know, it's so magnificent, as you can see from some of the James Bond movies. It is so magnificent. And I stood there, and I the only game that I truly understood was roulette, which is not a great odds to play roulette.
Right.
But I sidled up to this little old lady who had to be 104, and she had a seat at the table. And she had this book open up, and it was her system. And all I did was follow her system. And I think I made, I don't know, $60, $70, something like that.
Not right. Bad in 63.
That's like a week's salary for some
well,
people.
Well, yeah, it was a lot of money. And then I heard this music play, and everybody stopped. And into the casino walked Aristotle Onassis.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
With a beautiful woman on his arm, followed by Henry Ford. And I got invited into the private room where Henry was playing Onassis' Chemin de Fer, which I have absolutely no idea what the hell they were doing. All I knew is I spoke to the Ford PR guy, and he showed me that they had hundreds of thousands of dollars on a table.
Jeez.
So, you know, my 50 or 60, whatever I won, didn't even amount to a tip.
Right.
But it was quite an experience, and then from there I ended up getting invited back to Dearborn to drive the Monte Carlo rally car that won the class, and then the other cars on the high-speed oval. So, you know, I was like a real kid in the candy factory, and it was just wonderful.
That is amazing.
So this is like a journey back through your life writing this book, because a lot of you really chronologized a lot of that very well in the book. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
what were the feelings like as you were looking through these old pictures? And I'm sure the memories just came flooding back.
Well, yeah, of course the memories came back, but it also reminded me that I'm old.
Yeah.
Well, but you're still here, though. That's the main thing.
Still,
that's important.
To tell us the story.
You still can tell the tale, exactly.
That's important. Sure. And it also, you know, that trip allowed me to make friendship or friends with, you know, some of the Ford engineers, so that I had go-to guys that I can get information from. And eventually, I guess around 1964 or 65, I started building a street rod, and I worked with Ford and Shelby on a small block motor and a NASCAR drivetrain, a big rear and everything else. And it was great, because by 1965, I had taken over Cars magazine. Mm-hmm. And so I had control of all the magazines in the house, and it was kind of a great time for me, you know, super time.
You know, Marty, before I forget, I have to tell you a quick story. Good friend Steve Magnante, you know, from CarCraft.
Yeah.
And, you know who Steve, everybody knows who Steve is. I just had a recent thing. He sent me a piece that he wrote, and it got printed in a magazine. As a subscriber, I wrote to Steve and said, listen, I have to ask you the fan question. Will you autograph my magazine for me? And he did. He said, yeah, send it to me. So I did, and when he got back from Barrett Jackson, he sent me that with a bunch of other nice little stuff from photo shoots and an old CarCraft magazine from 65. And he says, I got 100 of these things. And so I wrote back to him and said, so do I. And I sent him a picture of a box I have on. It's the box from the Vintage Air from my car under my pool table, and just filled with old magazines. And he wrote back and said, wow, Ray, he goes, you got Cars magazine there. You've got like high performance street. He goes, you got some good magazines there. And I said, yeah. I said, well, I only keep the good stuff, you know. So now Steve was actually in awe of my magazine collection, which kind of was high praise, but it was Cars magazine.
Well, yeah. Steve is a good guy, and excuse me. A few years back when he wrote his book on altered wheelbase cars,
mm-hmm.
He had a very nice thing in there about me, that I supported that whole movement with Cars magazine back in the day. And he ran something on, I guess, I must have sent him the picture, because he credited the picture to me, but he put a piece in his book, and it's titled... It's a Sure Thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And it's a picture of me in 1963 adjusting the linkage on a 63 Dodge Ram Charger. And it was, you know, with the outboard opposed quads.
Right.
And it was a picture that was taken of me before we went to the track with this white 63 Dodge, and I had recently come back from the Army, and so I had this white stripper of a car, automatic, 426, I don't know if it was a stage 2, probably wasn't, but it was dual quads, and I had gotten a guy from the Army who I was with, and his friend, and we were going to go out to the track and run the car, and I made some runs locally with the car, and it was a pretty strong car. And we loaded it up with a toolbox. That day the picture was taken, I was just adjusting some linkage. And we threw a toolbox in the car, and my friend from the Army and his friend, and we all headed out to, I guess we're heading out to either New York National or West Hampton or whatever. We're on a Long Island Expressway, still in Nassau County, and we blew it up.
Oh, nice.
It had a pretty stiff gear in it, and I think I must have over-revved it cruising, and the car stopped. And it was Sunday about, 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. And I had to call the Dodge PR guy up, wake him up in the morning.
Oh, I'm sure he must have loved that.
Yeah.
And let him know that we didn't make it to the track, but you have to get a truck out here to get the car.
The pieces.
Marty, can we take a quick break?
Sure.
We come back, we'll talk more about your book, Ford Total Performance.
Very good, thanks.
Let's do it. Ray is in charge of the music today. All righty, when we come back, we'll be talking more with Marty Shore.
Yay!
Ford Total Performance, Ray Guarino, Joe D, and some very cool music in the background here at Motormouth Radio. So please, keep it where you got it. Got a lot more of this. It's all coming your way. All right, hold on that phone because we have the man on the line, Marty Shore.
Yay.
Who is the author of Ford Total Performance, a fantastic book of the total performance years from 63 to 71. It's just a highly, highly packaged, highly charged book. And we are really pleased to have you on the phone to talk a little bit about it with us, Marty. How was it working with Carroll Shelby?
Well, he was... You know, he was a great guy and a very competent driver, even though he gave up. By the time I knew him, he had given up racing because of his heart condition. And, you know, I'll tell you a funny story about that since you asked about Shelby. I think it was June of 1963. I'm pretty sure it was then. Riverside Raceway, and Ford held its 1964 long lead press preview on the track.
Mm-hmm.
And besides the usual new cars we got to drive, Shelby was there because it was his home track, and he had about four Cobras, including one of the famous comp Cobras with Webers on it. And we all got a chance to ride with either Dave McDonald or Carroll, and... It was the night before, and we're all having dinner at the Mission Inn, which is long gone, as is Riverside Raceway. And so we're all having dinner at the Mission Inn, and a bunch of us get invited up to Shelby's suite for drinks. Now, I'm not a late kind of guy. I'm not a real party guy. Even then, I wasn't. And we go up to this suite, which was ginormous. I mean... It was really a suite, and it had a full bar. And Shelby was putting him away. I mean, there were he had two or three girls with him, typical arm candy, some Ford people drinking. I left about probably 1 o'clock in the morning. Shelby had been drinking so much he was flat out on the bed with two women. Not Yikes. Doing anything. He looked like he was sleeping. But he had so much booze in him that it was amazing.
That he was a hard living dude, from what I understand.
Yeah.
And got up the next morning, had breakfast at about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and out to the track. I get out to the track, and there's Shelby in a Cobra. And there's a line for me to ride with him. Only a few hours early, he was gone. I mean, he was gone.
Blotto gone.
And, you know, he would have got a DUI just walking out of his room.
By the maid.
And so, you know, I didn't even give a crap about the whole safety aspects of it. I just got online. And,
yeah.
And we get in the car. Dave McDonald and Fran Hernandez were tuning up the Webers. Close the hood. Shelby's behind the wheel. I pop in with a helmet. We start talking a little bit. And then he just flat floors it.
Oh boy.
And this thing is screaming. You know, he's shifting at about 7 grand. And there's some tight corners on Riverside. and I didn't know what the hell to do.
Hold on.
I mean, I was holding on to whatever I could hold on to.
Yeah,
but
just,
this is a
just hold
open
on and
car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, he nailed the line on every corner.
Wow.
I mean, perfect. There's no way I could have done anything close to that. And the man was gone at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So as far as working with him is concerned, I had tremendous respect for him. And he did some great things, obviously, with Cobra. And obviously with GT40, as two of the three cars that took the first three spots at Le Mans in 66 were his cars. So he was great. As he got older later on, he kind of got, you know, very litigious. He was suing everybody. And, you know, it was just not a fun time for a lot of people. He tried to sue the Shelby Club and put them out of business. They eventually settled. But, you know, he had very few of his own organs left in his body.
Yeah, true.
And he was a real fighter, and he accomplished great things. And, you know, he was one of my heroes back in the day.
Mm-hmm. He's one of our heroes as well.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, for many people.
What about who?
He's one of our heroes, too.
Oh, right.
Totally. That is,
you know, it's a funny thing. When I wrote this book, people came out of the woodwork and said, I didn't know you were a Ford enthusiast. Mm. I thought you were a Corvette guy. And, you know, I realized, I said, you know, I'm not anything. I'm just a car guy.
Yep.
You know, if it's a good car, I love it. If it's a piece of crap, it's a piece of crap.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't particularly care, but, you know, there is no make that is number one in my mind. You know, I have a Ford product. I have a Chevy product. You know, it is what it is, and I respect a performance. I respect quality. I respect all of that kind of stuff.
Marty, do you think that could be that because through the years you were able to drive so many varied cars, you could see the good in the different brands, whereas just schlubs like us stuck with a car and then had brand, you know, we had brand loyalty.
Yeah, we got indoctrinated, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that's part of it.
Let them speak for themselves, Marty, because I think the way you do, I never had a brand loyalty, so I understand.
You never had
saying.
A fast car either. I'm talking about hot rods and fast stuff. Come on.
Yeah, you like certain cars because the spokes were easy to clean.
Yeah, well, now you're talking.
The wood ones.
You know, to be honest with you, you know, my first new car that I bought after I had gotten a job as an editor, I bought a 348 horse tri-power 61.
Nice.
Bonneville. Mm. And I fell in love with the car before I ever drove that particular car. What happened was I got an assignment to do a road test on a 348 horse 61 Pontiac, and I found a dealer in Connecticut whose son had ordered a loaded car, 8-lug wheels, everything. And it was a convertible, I think. It was a convertible, 4-speed convertible, bucket seats, 8 lugs, tri-power. And he gave me the car to play with for a few hours. And the car was so nice. Mm. I mean, the interior was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
The seats were fantastic.
It had the tri-color, the tri-color seats?
Yeah, yes.
I thought that was only in the 50s on those
cars.
And
the color was, I forget the name because I ordered it myself. It was that maroon.
Oh, yeah.
Used to be, I'm trying to think, Tijan red type thing. But
right, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, I drove the car and I couldn't believe how this big car with a 4-speed just handled and did everything so well. It had a T10 and it shifted like in a Corvette like butter.
Yeah.
And the engine was so responsive, and the 8 lugs were so beautiful.
Yeah. Wide track use.
That I came back and wrote about it and realized that I got to buy one of these things, but there's no way I can afford to buy 8 lugs and bucket seats and all this other crap. So I got just a Bonneville coupe, you know, manual windows, power steering, no air, posi rear, automatic. And It was probably one of the best cars I have ever owned.
Wow.
Just absolutely wonderful car.
Marty, we have a request. Our good friend Billy G from up in from the Malba Car Show.
Yeah.
He wants to hear about the... He's listening now, and he's loving it. He wants to hear about the Holman and Moody stuff.
You mean the rise and fall?
Yeah, whatever you want to...
Marty, let's take a quick break first, and we come back, and we can jump right into it. How does that sound?
We'll do.
All righty. You got music?
Absolutely.
We're going to see if Ray has music prepared right now.
Yeah. Okay.
We're talking with Marty Shore, the author of Ford Total Performance, right here on Motormouth Radio.
We're changing it up, Joe. You got to get those fingers limber.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Getting into a bluesy effect here, Marty.
Blues, boy.
Just got calluses listening to this.
Right here on Motormouth Radio, where we're talking with more of Marty Shore. It'll be coming right up right after this. We're going to get into the Holman and Moody years. Hold on. Alrighty, hold the phone because we're on the line with Marty Shore, the author of Ford Total Performance. And when we stepped away for a second, we were talking about the Holman Moody years.
Well, the Holman and Moody years, I have to really talk about in two different stages, because before I wrote this book, I honestly did not know the story behind Holman and Moody. All I knew is what most people knew, which was their cars won. They were Ford's racing arm in stock car racing, in road racing. They did Galaxies and Falcons that ran in Europe. They kind of led the way for safety in NASCAR. Quality, their cars were untouchable. They had the best drivers, the best everything, and they had Henry Ford's blessing to go out and win regardless of cost.
Marty, the thing I never realized, and I learned from this book, was that Ralph Moody was the race car driver, and John Holman was the promoter. I didn't realize that.
Right.
You know, like I said, from these books, you can learn quite a lot of history. It's great.
Well, the thing is that when I say there's two sides to the story, there's the public side, which most people know, and then there's the private side, which kind of got caught up in a lot of crap. Right around 68, 69, going into 70. First of all, the partnership of Holman and Moody. Ralph Moody was a successful race car driver and builder. John Holman was a businessman, con man, lovable scoundrel. He built the business. Ralph Moody did the technical part of it.
I got to borrow those phrases from my LinkedIn page.
What was that?
I want to borrow those phrases from my LinkedIn page.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It sounds kind of cool.
And the thing was that I had met John Holman briefly at some NASCAR races and Ford events. He wasn't the most talkative or friendly guy, but he seemed to be on top of everything. And Henry Ford loved them, absolutely loved them. And because of that, they made tremendous amounts of money. And what happened as time progressed, John Holman had an offer from Purolator to sell the business. And I'm not sure exactly the year, somewhere around 69. And he called Henry Ford up and told him. And Henry said, don't sell the business. As long as we're racing, you're going to be our people. You do everything. We don't want you to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, long story short, what happened was when they started changing the discipline when they started changing from backing down from racing into safety, into emissions, into all that kind of crap, Lee Iacocca discovered just how much money was being spent on racing. And he got to Henry, and Henry started pulling back from racing. NASCAR, drag, didn't matter what it was. And Holman and Moody started to suffer. And during the heyday of Holman and Moody, a lot of the guys, or some of the guys at Ford Motor Company, were kind of doing some illegal things. And they were not necessarily getting kickbacks from John Holman, but getting a lot of favors they weren't entitled to, like borrowing John Holman's plane, having his pilot take him on vacation, sending a boat with Holman and Moody Big Blocks in it up to their lake house, a lot of stuff like that. And that sort of led to the implosion of car craft, special vehicles at Ford. And Iacocca came down pretty hard on these people. And before you knew it, Ralph Moody told John Holman, I want out of this thing. I didn't know what was going on. I'll sell my stock back. And Holman bought his stock back. And Ralph Moody went on, opened up his own shop, went racing for a couple of years, somewhat successful, but not big time like Holman or Moody. And from then on, it was all downhill. The company went into kind of receivership, bankruptcy. Lee Holman, who wrote the foreword for my book, came out of his business, which was selling sailboats, and took over the company, put his money into it, and bought it out from the bank, and kept it alive. Mm. And they did an awful lot of GT40 race car work over the years. And Lee Holman today still has Holman and Moody, and builds GT40 continuation cars using 427 Holman and Moody big blocks and original bodies and platforms made from original tooling. He builds a 427 Fairlane for people and some hot new Mustangs. But the Holman and Moody name was the number one name in NASCAR. He had the best drivers. He had the best of everything. And it all came kind of tumbling down when they started auditing. The accountants started auditing racers and racing suppliers to Ford Motor Company. And that included Shelby, Holman and Moody, Bill Straub, you name it. Everybody got the audit, and I got to tell you, I can't reveal amounts of money because I really don't have them, but they all got caught with their pants down.
Mm.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And I can't say who was the worst, but who was the most honest and guy was Bill Straub, who ran the Trans Am stuff for Lincoln Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
I think they caught him for about $13.
Okay. That's good.
For putting gas in somebody's truck because his truck broke down and had to tow the factory car back.
Oh, boy.
So he made good for $13.
Yeah.
Nobody else made good for anything.
Amazing.
And we're talking, I got to believe there were probably millions of dollars involved here.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Parts disappeared. Cars disappeared, engines disappeared. It was just unbelievable when Iacocca found all this stuff out and brought it to Henry Ford. He couldn't believe it.
That is amazing. Marty, we're coming up to the top of the hour, but we just want to know, how would anyone be able to get a hold of your book? What are the ways to go about?
Well, the cheapest, or I should say the least expensive way to get it, is to go to Amazon.
Okay.
Just go to Amazon Books, put in the title, and the page will come up. And they usually have the best price. And they're doing very well selling it, because I checked this morning, and it was on the first page of the top 100 books.
Wow. So, congratulations.
The title of the book, for people who don't know, is Ford Total Performance. It's put out by Motor Books, and we have to thank our friend Nicole Scheel for sending us a copy of the book and always supporting us. We like to help out on the other end as well. And, people, anybody, if you like Fords at all, any kind of performance Fords, this is the book to read, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Marty, thank you so much for being here with us. We really do appreciate it. We love the stories.
Hey, thank you. It's always great talking with you, and, you know, anytime you want me, I don't have to write a book to get on your show. So.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
Call and talk about bagel, stickball, pizza, whatever you like.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, we hope to see another book in your future, but by all means, you are more than welcome to join us here at Motormouth Radio.
You guys are great, and I got to tell you, you're probably, of all the radio shows that I do, you guys are the most fun, and you also ask the right questions.
Ah, excellent.
Well, that's wonderful.
Thank you, Marty.
Thanks, Marty. We do appreciate that. We'll take that compliment any day. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, my friends. Take care now.
All right.
You too. We'll talk to you soon.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Wow.
That was great.
Hey, if you missed any of that interview with Marty Shore, the author of the book Ford Total Performance, check it out at motormouthradio.com or later on in the week, we're on Performance Motorsports Network and, of course, iHeartRadio. Very proud to be with them. So anything coming up in the future, Almighty?
I'm going to see if our stalker on the text line here, Pat Seppi, we're going to get Pat in the show to talk about transmissions and all sorts
of... Oh, yeah, that'll be fun.
See if we can get him in maybe next week.
Yeah, come on, Pat.
That's always a lot of fun because he gets the phones jumping.
He gets us jumping, too. We get him jumping.
Pat's got that way of
always
just moving it along.
A lot of information goes through.
Yes, we're going to call it the Get to the Point Show. That's what we're going to do. Joseph, thank you so much once again being here, sharing the stage with us as
My
usual.
Pleasure.
It was a day to listen. We all listened and learned today, which is great.
Definitely.
That
quite,
is true.
Quite the guest, yes.
Yeah, Marty is just,
He's
just can't get over the wealth of information and the great way he explains it comes over. It's just very cool.
Yeah, you don't get many guests more of an A-list caliber than someone like Marty Shore.
Very,
that's for sure.
Very true.